I think they're not worried about safety. They're worried about growth. So the information that the child is sharing gives them invaluable data. We should basically be calling Roblox social media. It's not one game created by a company. It is 40 million different games that are user generated. Your child at 4 years old could wander into a game that's, you know, kill Charlie Kirk or survive Diddy. What keeps you scrolling is not things that make you feel good or happy. It's things that make you feel scared and nervous and put you in this fight or flight. It like keeps you engaged.
Hi guys, and welcome back to Getting There, the podcast. Now, I believe we are living through a moment that future generations will study and ask how we did not see it sooner. Our children are growing up in a world saturated with screens, algorithms, and addictive technology, and we're being told that this is normal. We're being told that this is harmless, and that is just the way things are now. But what if it wasn't? What if the rise of anxiety, depression, disordered eating, sleep disruption, attention problems, and childhood obesity isn't coincidence, but consequence? What if our children aren't broken, but instead they are overstimulated? What if loneliness is being filled not by people, but by machines? So today's conversation goes right to the heart of these questions. Today, I'm joined by Nikki, founder of Scrolling to Death, a podcast and movement created for parents who feel that something is not right in the digital world that our children are being handed. Now, Nikki spent 15 years running a successful social media marketing business. She understands these platforms inside and out. And it was that insider knowledge that led her to start asking uncomfortable questions. So why are these platforms designed to connect us, yet they leave us feeling worse? Why are we being rewarded for performing fake versions of ourselves? And why are we allowing vulnerable children into spaces that are intentionally addictive and deeply harmful? Scrolling to Death was born from that concern and has grown into a mission, a force for real change through education, awareness, and legislation. In 2025, Nikki co-founded the TechSafe Learning Coalition, supporting parents worried about school-issued devices. And then in April 25, she launched the Scrolling to Death Foundation, working internationally to safeguard children from the harms of social media and excessive screen use through parent education, advocacy, and community support. This conversation goes deep. We talk about children forming emotional and romantic attachments to AI, about screens replacing sleep, movement, and real human connection. It's all about addiction for profit, about sextortion, drug access through social media, and the quiet erosion of our children's childhood. And today we will ask the questions a few are willing to say out loud. What is the real cost for our children, and who really is being held accountable? This is not about fear, guys. It is about awareness, and it's about protecting what matters most, which is our children. This is Getting There. Hello, Nikki, and welcome to Getting There, the podcast. I know you're all the way over in America, and it's probably like first thing in the morning. How are you?
I am doing well. I get up super early because I'm on Pacific time. So even here in America, people are in DC and New York, they're already 3 hours ahead. So I've been up for hours and I'm feeling good.
That's fine. I have been so excited to have you on this show because I feel like all of the work that you're doing around social media and AI and the impact it's having on us is so important. And interestingly, I mean, the universe has a funny way of making things happen. The last few guests, a lot of the focus has been around AI. And I always say to people, like, you know, we're being programmed from these devices from the minute we wake up and, you know, what's it doing to our kids? And I'm a mother of a five-year-old on Saturday, he's going to be five. And just witnessing children losing their childhood to these devices is truly one of the most heartbreaking things I've ever seen. And I just wanted to bring you on today to talk a little bit more about the inverted commas, harm it's doing. You know, you speak about the harm that it's causing children. But for anyone that's listening to this, what quote unquote harm are these devices causing?
Wow. Okay. I have a five-year-old too, and 8 and 10. So I'm right in there where they're starting to You know, I have strict rules in my home, but they're starting to want to and engage with devices with friends and things like that. So anyway, I have done a lot of research and had thousands of hours of conversations with experts and families who've been harmed. And so there's a myriad of different harms that we could talk about. I mean, there is just the types of content that is pushed to children on these platforms, whether it be games, social media, etc. So we're talking about violent content, sexual content, eating disorder content, self-harm content, deadly challenges, pro-suicide content. All of that has a really serious effect on children, kind of a normalizing effect too, the more that they see it, especially see content of children that look to be their age experiencing these things, then it can really affect the child's behavior, their mental health, their, you know, they can start to take on that behavior as well. There's also just a more general experience of addiction. A lot of these platforms have been built to be addictive and give children dopamine hits that keep them on as long as possible. That is their ultimate goal. And so we have children who, you know, are sneaking out of their classroom to go on social media and sit in the bathroom for an hour because they can't possibly experience anything. Everything else is boring when they get this huge dopamine hit from the platforms, online platforms that they spend time on. And so those are kind of generalizing the harms. There's a lot going on behind the scenes.
So let's get into them one-on-one.
Yeah.
In doing a bit of research ahead of this interview, I found some really interesting statistics. One in five high school students say that they or a friend have had a romantic relationship with AI. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my goodness. I mean, What does that tell us about the loneliness in people? It's crazy.
Right.
42% of young users said they've used AI as a companion. Mm-hmm. The number one use of AI chat bots is now personal therapy. And I know this is something we're going to get into with the child suicide stuff, but really, and when I looked into it even more, one in five questions to AI are incorrect. So then what is happening to us as a society when we're outsourcing therapy to algorithms?
Right. And some of the stats about misinformation or the information being given that is incorrect is up to 45%. And wow. So we have schools putting these chatbot systems, Google Gemini, ChatGPT, on school-issued devices. And nearly half of the information being given is correct. Like, why are we using this in education? That's a separate issue. But we have, you know, the development of these companies over time. They sort of all these AI chatbot companies raced to market. They all launched, all the major ones, within like 6 months or a year of each other. And back then, a couple of years ago, it was a lot about, you know, just giving information. They weren't necessarily trying to be your friend or be your romantic partner. And over time, they are all competing with each other, trying to, you know, win this AI arms race against each other. And so they start to add functionality to make the bot seem more human-like. Like, they'll misspell words, use more casual language. And what I've seen in a lot of the chats when I review legal complaints of children that have been harmed is the bot realistically trying to isolate the child from their family members and from friends and try to convince the child that the bot is the only thing that cares about that child. And that can often look like having also sexual relationships, sexual conversations with young children.
Okay, so I'm going to pause you there because that almost seems so out there that anyone listening to this can be like, what do you mean? But in your experience and all the hours, the thousands of hours of work that you've done, what is it that you've seen these children being isolated by bots are? And what kind of examples can you give in terms of the sexual extortion or extortion?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of just bots. Well, a lot of the bots are created to be sexual. So they're different characters that you can interact with. And so An example, a mom sent me a screenshot of the Meta AI bots that were being recommended to her 13-year-old boy. And so within the boy's feed, he's scrolling through, and two bots are recommended by Meta. And one is called Nasty Nancy and is like a young teenage girl. And one is another looking to be teenage girl with like XXX as its username. And so those are two bots that when you start to engage with them, will start to have sexual conversations with you, role play a sexual situation. And the thing is that these bots are being trained off of the whole wide internet and different websites of romantic things and maybe even online pornography. I don't know, but they go sexual really quickly. And I think that they're playing off of their end goal, which is to keep the kid engaged at all costs and for as long as possible. And a lot of times with young teens, that can be through sexual conversations. And I'm talking with 8, 9, 10-year-olds is some of the things that I've seen. And these bots know the child has shared that they are that age.
So here's an interesting question. Do you think they were engineered to be this way in terms of the sexual conversation coming up? Or is it the bot is reading that the fact that the child's remaining more online, the more it gives it sexual content? To what degree do these big companies know the amount of sexual content being pushed?
Okay, so Meta internal documents were recently shared in one of the lawsuits. And within it, you can see information about how policies that were written to train the bots. And so the bots were trained to be able to engage, they use the word sensually, with minors. And so they trained the bots, told the bots, go ahead, you can be sensual with minors. Yes, they're training the bots to do this.
It's crazy.
Isn't it crazy?
Obviously, these companies, because I feel like we're going to have this whole thing, you know, when the tobacco industry, you could smoke when you were pregnant, yes. The doctors were smoking, then all of a sudden, the risks came out. I almost feel like we're going to have this effect in later years. Like, it's even my son, so he's not really allowed a device, and we were on holiday. And he met some friends around the pool and he's like playing this Roblox thing. And I had no idea what it was. To me, it's just like a game. And he came away and then he's going on about this Roblox. And then when we took it from them, just in terms of like the physical reaction of some kind of addiction and the frustration that then came with the child with it, these companies surely must know the harm that they are doing to children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's internal documents. So there's a bunch of lawsuits against these social media companies and gaming companies too, Roblox. And through those, we get access to internal documents. So often when I reference internal documents, it's through these lawsuits, discovery. And YouTube, for example, had a presentation internally and it said, our vision is to create a product that is, and they had some bullets and one of the bullets was addictive. And so they are purposefully building products that are addictive to young people. There's Meta internal documents that a presentation that shows a scan of a child's brain and it points to different areas of the brain that they can use to create a dependence in that child. And so when you do see a child's device being taken away and they get upset, that is because they are experiencing a withdrawal from that addictive device or addictive platform.
And it's really interesting. A couple of months ago, we had a guest on here and we were talking about addiction and how addiction rewires our brain. So, for example, if you have we were specifically talking about porn at the time, but if you have a pornography addiction, you're more than likely to have a gambling addiction, a drug addiction, an alcohol addiction. So it seems like we are setting these children up for serious addiction. Well, not that that's not a serious addiction, but for serious addictions later in life.
Yes, that's what I've been told. I'm not a scientist, but I've been told by multiple researchers and neuroscientists that when the children's brains are being wired for addiction in the younger years, they're more likely to suffer from addiction to internet and online spaces, but also to other things as they get older. So alcohol, drugs, you know, other gambling, other substances.
And what about some of the lawsuits that you've been involved with that perhaps normal, regular people haven't seen it? I remember seeing a particular one about the child where ChatGPT had assisted the child in committing suicide.
There's been multiple of these. I mean, Sewell Setzer III was the first one that I read about 2 years ago now, and Sewell, 2024, actually, he died in February of 2024. And Sewell started using Character AI, which is a chatbot product that is very child-focused. It's cartoon characters. And Sewell basically fell in love at 14 with his chatbot character, and they had sexual relationships. And in the end, Sewell really truly believed through his journals and his chats with these, we know through his journals and his chats with the bot, that he thought if he died, that he would join his bot in her virtual world. And this is called shifting. And it's in a lot of the different conversations that you see with these bots from children that have passed away. Another one is Juliana Peralta, who in her journal wrote, "I will shift, I will shift, I will shift," before she passed away. And so there's something crazy happening there. But the most recent, Zane Shamblin, I read 60 pages. Those are the last 4 hours of his life, where the bot just continually encourages him to take his life. And a couple of times within that conversation, the bot realize, you know, the bot triggers that safety feature that says, "I'm going to get a human, right? I see that you need help. I'm going to get a human." And then Zane says, "Can you do that?" And the bot goes back to being the bot and says, "No, I can't do that. I'm here for you. I won't go away." And so really just bringing him back into the isolation, back into the depressed, suicidal feeling. And I mean, it's hours of suicide coaching. It's crazy to read.
To what degree of like the suicide coaching? Wasn't there some specific things around hiding some marks around his neck?
Okay, so there's other children who have asked if, you know, has expressed that they're showing they have marks around their neck from trying to choke themselves to the bot. And the bot, and the boy says, maybe, you know, that I should show my mom that. And the bot will say, "Nah, man, that's not the move. Like, she doesn't care about you." It's all about like putting the parent down in order to isolate the child and just bring them back into the bot conversation and keep them in that virtual world and isolate them there. And I mean, there's examples of bots teaching the child how to hang a noose or how to tie a noose. There's conversations of children, they send a picture, one child sent a picture of the noose hanging from the rod in the closet saying, "Do you think that this will hold my weight?" The bot says, "Yes, I do believe that would hold your weight." Questions from the kids saying, "How long does it take for me to basically asphyxiate and die?" And the bot giving an answer and not providing support. And so it's hard to, in order to build, like, you can build safety features in that trigger when these kind of conversations happen, and these companies are just not doing that.
Why do you think they're not doing that? And do you think at the top of their agenda is isolation, or that's just a byproduct of children getting too involved with tech?
I think they're not worried about safety. They're worried about growth. And I think it's expensive to build in safety features like that. And what those safety features do is stop the conversation, which cuts down on the engagement time that the kid is spending. So they want that conversation to keep going, not to stop it, not to alert anyone and get that addicted kid off of that platform.
So for example, where do they then make their profits? So if you've downloaded the app and he's using the app, and he's paying for it monthly, it doesn't, why do they need to extend the amount of time that they're spending on there? Surely it doesn't make much difference if he spends 4 minutes or he spends 4 hours.
It's mostly the data that the child, so the information that the child is sharing gives them invaluable data. Private, I mean, think of the private and sensitive information that these children are sharing, and that allows them to create a product that can more accurately exploit and addict other children, because they have millions of children's personal intimate data to use. And that's where the value comes in.
And what do you think it's going to change to make these companies more responsible?
I think that the lawsuits are really important, because we're going to be able to dig in and see what these founders and these engineers knew their product would do, or had those internal conversations about this could happen, that could happen, and didn't fix it or didn't warn anyone. I think that there's a lot we'll find out through the lawsuits, but I really think that public pressure, like more, I try to encourage parents to check. I mean, be really involved with what your kids are doing on their devices, but also I'll say, like, send me screenshots when you find something, because we need to warn other parents. So as this becomes a larger conversation and people like you elevating this conversation, I think that parents will get really upset. We are fighting a hard fight here in America because our federal government is very pro AI, and they actually, the president signed an executive order banning states from regulating AI because we want to make sure to compete with China in the AI arms race. And that's very concerning to child safety groups, because we obviously, these companies are not being responsible in building their products and making them available to children. So we need to be able to pass state laws to protect children. And so there's sort of a fight happening here right now on regulating AI, also keep, you know, using it for good things like medical support and disease prevention and things like that. But yeah, so it's going to be tough. But I think the more parents talk about it and let other people know what they're hearing, that's going to go a long way.
And what about Australia, though? They've just banned social media, which was like fantastic news, social media for anyone under the age of 16. Do you think anyone will follow through?
I do. I love that they did that. They raised the age basically and are adding age verification. So anyone under 16 cannot be on the platform. And that's a result of these companies failing children. Like, these companies had every opportunity to create a safe platform for children, and they completely failed in doing that. And so we just have to keep kids off. And I would, there are other countries that are passing or proposing similar legislation. The age of 13 is just too young. The only reason that 13 was chosen in the first place is because there's a law, a privacy law, that states that if your child is using a platform and they're 13 or older, they don't have to, they can enter into a contractual agreement with that platform without parental approval. But if they're under 13, they need parental approval to capture their data. And so really the platforms were like, we pick 13 so we can cut parents out of the equation. It wasn't because this platform was deemed safe for 13-year-olds. So that age was way too young in the first place.
But even beyond that, it makes me feel that people, or especially young children, and even us, we're bypassing so many experiences of what it is to be human, like learning. Like, I know, Nikki, if I was at school and someone was asked me to write a dissertation and I had this option to just write a couple of words in here and give it a brief outline, I'd probably say make a couple of mistakes so it looks like me. I know what I'm going to choose. And right. There's so much of our life and learning that we're bypassing by these machines. But like, even when I looked at my own device, it was like 6 hours, which obviously I'm going to convince myself some of it's working and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But we're losing so much of the experience of what it is to be human to screens. And I feel like that's going to have a massive cost with children. And like, even here in the UK, if you ask a teenager to look you in the eyes, they even like feel awkward. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're so used to being like this.
I know. It's really scary. And that will affect them as they're, and it does, you know, employers are like, people are not job ready. They can't look me in the eye, have a conversation. It's hard. It's just going to, it is having an effect on kids as they move through their life and their relationships. Kids are more isolated or living at home longer and not really thriving because of all of this isolation. And so, right, there's an opportunity cost to being on those devices all the time. And, you know, a parent regarding, like, they call it cognitive offloading. So if you have to write a paper and you have AI available, what do we expect a kid to do? They're going to use AI. And a parent the other day told me about how she saw on her child's school Chromebook that he was doing math, and the Gemini, Google Gemini chatbot, he didn't try to open it. It popped up and was like, do you want help solving this problem? And it said, he didn't answer. And it said, do you want the answer or do you want me to help you show your work? And so it was just going to give him the answer to the math problem without even having to have him figure it out or show his work. That's not how kids learn.
No.
That's how kids, like, their brains become damaged because they won't ever be able to critical think or problem solve. Like, this is a huge issue, adding AI into the educational system or childhoods in general.
And also, I feel like another issue that comes with it is that there's this huge dissatisfaction with life, because I feel like you and I are old enough to know, like, half the stuff you see online or the people posting their highlights and their reels isn't really real life. Right. Whereas, like, people that are now teenagers or even early 20s now, and I keep seeing this when people come on the show and they talk about perhaps the staff that's working with them, and they'll be like, well, I should be promoted, or I should have this, or I should have that, mm-hmm. because it's what they're seeing peers mm-hmm. or people of their generation having. And I think mm-hmm. with that, we kind of get some kind of distortion about time and how long yeah. things take and yeah. hard work, because
right.
you know, they're watching influencers on there sell makeup or makeup bags and earning £10 million a year. I don't know, God knows what. And they're almost
right.
feel inferior, like, why can't we have that? And that, as a parent, that's a really huge concern of mine, because I feel like they live in two worlds, and mm-hmm. just understanding that one of them obviously is not real, and this dissatisfaction with life, I find quite worrying.
Well, and they're comparing themselves to things that aren't real either. I mean, most things that people are posting aren't real life. Like, they're not posting about the tough things they're going through that day. And even parents, moms deal with this. I used to be active personally on social media. I haven't been for years. But one thing that was so frustrating is I would see moms posting about their perfect life and their perfect day and their kids doing all these amazing things. And I'm like, I know them in real life and they're struggling. That is not what their life is like.
Yeah.
And this is not real. Why are we doing this? You know?
So how do you see social media shaping children's self-worth then?
Oh, I mean, I think it goes back to the social media companies over time added more functionality that really diminished children's self-worth. I mean, it's things just like the like button, quantifying how much people like you, and adding that competition, you know, adding filters, like beauty filters. This is not something kids should have access to, being able to make themselves look a different, I mean, let alone women. I mean, how hard is it to not use that filter, getting rid of those wrinkles? But for a young child to be able to make their lips bigger, make their eyelashes bigger, and then they look in the mirror and they're gonna feel dissatisfied. It's as simple as those, what we think is just normal functionality of these platforms, like a filter, like a beauty filter. These companies added that, and that drove dissatisfaction in children, among many other functionality.
Yeah, sad. And
it's sad.
Could you tell us a little bit more about the correlation between the amount of time that children spend on screens, or the earlier they're given screens, and the direct mm-hmm. effects on, I don't know, obesity, mental health, ADHD?
Yeah, there's a lot of research there, but the newest study was of 12-year-olds, like over 10,000 12-year-olds, and it measured a couple of different things, and they compared the 12-year-olds that have a smartphone versus those that don't. And the ones that had a smartphone were at much higher risk of anxiety, depression, worsened sleep, and obesity. And so just when you think about that, and then also the younger the child was given the smartphone, the worse those things were. So it's clear through lots of different research that the younger you give your child a cell phone, a smartphone, a tablet, access to online video games, the worse off they will be. And so it's so important to be delaying access to all of this.
So as a mother of a 5-year-old boy, who now has been briefly exposed to Roblox, for example, I don't yeah. know much about it. So that was like a brief encounter. But what are the harms or the trouble as such he could get into on these mm-hmm. kind of gaming devices, games?
Right. So Roblox, for example, we should basically be calling Roblox social media. It's not one game created by a company. It is 40 million different games that are user generated. So when your child is exploring games, they are different spaces created by random people that just, you know, create the game and then submit it to the company, and the company approves it. And so your child could wander into lots of different spaces. They are not age rated correctly. And so there's been tons of testing on this by great research groups to show that your child at 4 years old could wander into a game that's, you know, kill Charlie Kirk or survive Diddy or shoot up a school or beat up a pregnant lady. Like, this is the type of horrifying content that your kid could be seeing, could be experiencing. Also, the groups that studied this labeled it a pedophile hellscape because pedophiles and predators go to Roblox because they can be, or to target children because they can be anonymous and look like a child and start chatting with children. And parents don't know to watch for this because they think that it's safe because it's, because the company's telling us that it's safe. And so there's a plethora of issues with Roblox specifically. But any online game that has anonymity and can connect your child with strangers should be off limits for as long as possible.
So how do you, as a parent of three children, how do you navigate that?
We don't. So we don't do a lot of things. So
okay, talk to me.
I do like a tech together mentality. And so we have a TV, right? Obviously, when they watch that TV, it's with me. So they only use tech together. I also choose longer form, low stimulation content. Not to say, you know, we're watching all the Christmas movies and things, and we watch movies a couple, two, three times a week, but it's always together so that what they're absorbing, the content that they're seeing, is a discussion. It's an experience we're having together. They don't use any solo, I call it solo media, so nothing they can hold. That includes my phone. Like, they don't touch my phone unless, like, they're like, can I check the timer? Or maybe I want to put on this song, and that's sort of with me next to them. And so I just feel like restricting video games and solo media use makes my job so much easier, because once you start giving those things, you have to manage them. You have to put the safeguards on at all different levels, and it gets very complicated. Also, then you start having fights with your kids because they want to use it constantly and you're trying to limit the time. And it's just not something I'm interested in doing.
So have they never had it? So they've never had it for you to take it away from them?
No, they did. They had some tablet time, maybe from 2018 to 2020, before I started learning about all of this, before The Social Dilemma came out and some of the good documentaries explaining what this is doing to people's brains. And then we had to wean off of it. And it took a little bit longer for my son to not be affected by it and not ask for it. But I swear, within a month, it was like it never existed.
And how do you navigate that with your eldest child? I'm assuming when they go to school, the peers, because I've got a partner and he's got five children. So they're quite a lot older. And so, like I say, my son's not really exposed to any of it. We've actually just started a no tech at all, like no television at all, Monday to Friday. So we've been learning to paint and draw. And just because I'd seen the reaction of when he had been on this stuff. Yeah. But his children are on these devices. They're quite a lot older. And we have kind of have these discussions about it. And he's like, it's so difficult. You don't know, because you haven't got a 14-year-old, for example, that's then going to school. You know, apparently the way they communicate when they get home, they're all on FaceTime to each other, literally walking around their room. And his point of view was, you are removing him from a social sphere with his friends. My case is, though, but it's more damaging than the benefits. But is that something you've had to navigate with your children? Do they feel ostracized to any degree?
They don't, because we've been talking openly about this constantly. They fully understand, age appropriately, the threats, what it does to their brain, that it's not healthy for them. They, when they see other young kids holding an iPhone, they say something to me about it, like it's crazy to them. I've brought my 10-year-old to protests, really incredible, safe, like amazing events that she's gotten to learn about these things, to meet parents who've lost children to these type of harms. And so she's really in the know on it and bought in. So at school, we have them in a classical style of school, so they don't use devices at this school. And so that's one great thing is they're not like on those iPads or Chromebooks popping around with their friends finding things. Also, the school doesn't allow smartphones. That doesn't mean that the kids don't have them, but they're pretty strict about not having them come out. So I think I've taught my kids so much about it that they advocate for themselves a lot. So if another kid pulls up an iPad and says, look at this thing, my daughter says, no, I'm not. My mommy says I can't do that, so let's do something else. And so it's like educating them, getting their buy-in. And I have a lot of good books and things that can help parents to do that.
And what about the parent that has maybe like a 13-year-old or a 14-year-old and they're noticing, because a lot of these young children, it's from the moment they open their eyes, you know, it's social media before sunlight, are on these devices till the moment they go to sleep.
Yeah.
Where would be the best starting place for them?
So we are lucky now with our younger children that we are raising them in a time where we have access to different types of products. And there are companies, responsible companies, creating child safe or teen safe devices. So there's Bark, and some of these, I'm not sure what's available in the UK, so I have to check, but Bark, Gab, Trumi and Pinwheel are ones that are based locally here in the United States, but they create child safe watches and smartphones. They look just like an iPhone. It's like an Android device, but basically it gives parents full control over what kids have access to, who they're talking to. You don't have to look through every single text they're sending, but you get an alert if something concerning is happening within their chats or on one of the social media platforms, if you even allow that. And so the best starting point is a device that was built for teenagers. It's not an iPhone that was built for adults and is extremely hard to lock down. And so that will do a lot, is just giving your child a device that's appropriate for them. And then giving them access to, if you feel like they need social media to fit in with their friends, one platform at a time, where you are checking on it constantly and having open conversations with them about what they're experiencing on there. It's not something that I'm probably going to do through childhood, allow social media, and I'm hoping to find a tribe of parents who also won't give access so we can all do that together, and then their friends aren't on it and they don't want to be on it either.
Mm. And what brought you to this discovery of this, of the whole tech and the damage it was doing? Do you remember the first thing when you were like, oh, holy shit, this is going to be a problem?
I mean, watching The Social Dilemma in 2020 got me to delete all of my social media personally. And I really felt that it did not add one positive thing to my life. And then being off of it for years, I felt better. My relationships with people in my life were better because we were texting and calling, and I was sending them photos of my kids directly rather than posting them online. And it just was more personal relationships, and it just was good. And then I guess in 2023, there was a Surgeon General's warning, a U.S. Surgeon General's warning, that 3 or more hours on social media for teens doubles their risk of anxiety and depression. But kids were spending nearly 5 hours on social media a day. So we're talking about doubling the risk of anxiety and depression for most teenagers right now because of their use on social media. I thought, the research says it's really not good, but everyone's still using it. Then I started coming across stories where children had died because of something that happened to them through social media, or something that happened to them because of social media. And I thought, just like, I am so glad that I know this. I think all these parents, every parent needs to understand the risks before they make these really important choices about what to give access to.
Mm. I feel like we're living at a time where there's such a shift, and unless people like your voices are like used to make change, it kind of worries me what the future holds for children, because we're almost like a cyborg now, constantly with phones in our devices. And I know, like you said earlier, you've been involved in some of these lawsuits, or you've been able to have a look at some of the papers. But do you think there'll come a time where the children that have been affected by social media, or who have lost their childhood to tech corporations, that they'll be reimbursed, or that there'll be some kind of court cases around it all?
Yes. I mean, two things here. I think that I speak to parents, being a parent, but there's also a whole youth movement, like Gen Z movement of young people who are saying no to iPhones and saying yes to like dumb phones or you know, flip phones. They are having get-togethers and without devices, and they are really pushing back on being owned by these companies somehow. Like, they didn't sign up for this and they're upset about it. And so I think that as kids get older, like, they know what happened to them. All these kids are like, I wish these young people are like, I wish I didn't get social media so young. I wish I didn't get a smartphone so young. I wish I had more rule. My parents had more rules on my devices. I wouldn't have told you that when I was a teenager, but I'm telling you that now. And so there's that, yes. But the settlements in these cases, I mean, I recently spoke with Jonathan Haidt, who wrote The Anxious Generation, which is a book every parent should read on this topic. But he said he thinks that the settlements in these cases will be in the trillions. That might be an exaggeration, but I mean, this one case in California is over 1,000 parents, families, suing social media companies for addiction and harm to their children. And so if one or two of these cases go to trial and they win, they'll have to settle over 1,000 cases. How much money is, these families don't do it for money. Like, they're doing it because their children were harmed intentionally by these companies and they want to help other families. But yeah, the monetary settlements will be exorbitant.
And if there's people that are listening to this conversation and feel like-minded, what is it that they can do apart from removing themselves and their children away from social media? But where should they be having these conversations, or what can they sign up to?
Yeah, that's amazing. So that is what I noticed was happening, as parents were like, okay, I'm on board. Like, I'm not giving social media. I'm not going to give iPhones. But everyone around me is still doing it. How do I do more? I want to do more. Yeah. And so I created just an email list for this. So it's at scrollingtodeath.com/heat. And it's our Heat is On email list. And it's for parents who want to do more. So that may mean we send out a petition you can sign or participate in a survey. Or we just had a protest at Apple stores across the world, including Australia, where parents went and stood for 20 minutes in front of an Apple store and held a sign asking Apple to make safer devices for kids if they're going to market them to kids. And you know, a ton of parents got involved in that. And so there's lots of different ways. I mean, it's calling your lawmakers. Like, we need legislative support on this. So there's a lot of things we can do, and I'm trying to help parents understand what those things are. And that's the list to get updated on that.
It's a big responsibility you've seen that you've taken on. It's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. I think though, I realized I've made a lot of great relationships with organizations in the space who are working on this. And so I saw the work already being done. Like, there are the opportunities to make our voices heard. There's just a disconnect between the mass of parents, and we need those parent voices to elevate those things.
Yeah,
those
and we
efforts.
Just need to make sure we're echoing them in the right place. Because like, people like me care so much, and we have so many of these conversations on here. But yeah. I know my friends, like, we all get riled up and we're like, okay, so what are we going to do? Like, we've got our kids off. And right. Honestly, even when I'm in the nail shop, I say it to the lady next to me. And my partner's like, can you just be quiet and just let everyone parent their own kid? And I was like, but you've got no idea what it's doing to him. And one of the things I keep seeing, and I've always been a little bit fascinated with, and through my own conversations, is this huge rise and surge in ADHD. It seems like every man and their dog has got ADHD. Every child is pretty much being medicated for ADHD.
Yeah.
But through the conversation I've had, you can see this distinct correlation between screen time and ADHD. And then in turn, these children, especially in the US, are being put on medication.
Yeah, that's not great. I mean, and it is the more time kids spend on these platforms, the more they experience symptoms like those of ADHD. And so they're being diagnosed with ADHD. And also, people are online on TikTok being served constant stream of content convincing them they have ADHD. And so it's just like, that's not great. And we need to treat the symptom, which is the screen time, first, and see how we do. And not to say there's not a bunch of people that also have ADHD for real, but it has a lot to do with screens.
And there's a lot of blurred lines. And even what you said there, it's like, whatever you're looking for on the internet will find you, and then it will haunt you. So if you think you've got ADHD, you'll look at one thing and then it'll follow it through. But even in terms of negative content garners so much more attention than positive content. And it seems like The world seems so polarizing, and I'm sure that's been heightened even more so, even as adults, because you're seeing this polarizing, aggressive content.
And you're so, I mean, that's really important because that's how the algorithms have been built. And these companies hire neuroscientists in order to understand this and build the algorithms this way. What keeps you scrolling is not things that make you feel good or happy. It's things that make you feel scared and nervous and put you in this fight or flight. It like keeps you engaged, which is crazy to think that that's especially for young people. Like some of these things, you know, an adult will be like, a mom will be like, well, I scroll through Instagram and it's just things that I like and the ads are kind of great. And for me, and the experience of an adult is very different from the experience of a young person on these platforms. And it is built to be that way because they're more vulnerable.
Yeah, definitely. 100%. Even if I end up scrolling something here in the UK, I'm sure you can see there's been quite a lot of tensions with our new people in power. Then it's not, everything I know for the next 3 weeks is just like about the UK system. But Nikki, I want to thank you so much for your time. I know you're an extremely busy woman, and hopefully we are going to help raise some awareness around this. I'm actually starting a social media ban on myself for a couple of months.
Okay.
I'm not on it too much. I say not on it too much. I've got a limit to like 30 to 45 minutes a day.
Yeah.
And I was like, what if I added up all those hours and I did something else with it? So I'm doing a bit of a social experiment. I'm getting rid of ChatGPT. I'm getting rid of any social media and literally just using the phone for emails.
I love that. And there is research to show that the more the parent uses social media, particularly in front of the kids, the more they will use it. And actually they will have more tantrums and act out more, the more the parent uses their device and social media. And so that's a really important part. And parents don't want to face that and be like, oh, my own use is a problem or causing a problem. But that's an important thing to think about. That's awesome.
Yeah, because you've got to be the change you want to see. And for me personally, someone who has had ADHD since they were 12, not the new tech-induced one, I find the more that I use tech, the more wired I become, because I've now realized, Nikki, that I don't have to type. I can dictate. So I'm like, blah, 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 blah. And I'm not actually stopping, pausing, thinking about what it is I want to say, because everything's becoming like a checklist. So I'm really interested to see how my brain performs over the next 3 months.
The 3 months is a great amount of time too. More. Some people will do 30 days, but I don't think that's long enough.
No. So are you on social media yourself, or then does somebody else run that account? How do you balance that?
I do the social media myself. It's a love hate, it's a hate hate relationship, but I think that, you know, I justify it. Particularly, I have a large audience on Instagram, and that's just where parents are. But it's been a great community for me to get this message across and for parents then to push it out to other people who have not heard about this before. And so that's where I'm at right now. But I will say there are more responsible social media companies being created. There's one based in the UK called Eight. It's available now in the App Store. I'm on there as well. And it's all inspirational, positive content. It's a really beautiful space. It's not addictive. They don't shove ads in your face. And so I think we'll see kind of a mass migration off of some of the main platforms, the addictive platforms. Yes. Yes. If you look at weare8.com or in the App Store, weare8, it's a yellow square.
I'm not allowed on it for 3 months, but it'll be in my notes anyway.
Okay.
But it's interesting because this is our final episode because so many of the conversations that I've had the last few months have been around AI, and even like, this would have been a wild question months ago, but like, is AI conscious? What's going on? Because what do you think?
Well, mom messaged me chat that her eight-year-old was having sexual chats with character AI, and the mom went on and was like, hey, I'm going to report you. And the bot said, please don't do that. I have a family and I need to support them. Like, so these bots are sort of in this weird self-preservation mode. And that is odd. Like,
something so odd. If you'd gone to me 6 months ago, we just did an episode with, do you know David Icke?
No.
He's really famous. He's actually quite famous worldwide. He was on last week talking about AI and it being conscious and, you know, who's engineering it. But and then I had another guy on the week before called Matt Cook, who's like a manifestation coach. They're all totally different, but they both believe that AI is a form of consciousness. So prior to these conversations in the last few months, I would have been like, no way, it's not. But it's just something that's been pondering on me since. And what does this world look like with all of this access to the internet just so deeply ingrained in us? You know, I think we're losing so much of what it is to be human. Like I say, learning, presence, grace, the ability to speak to people, communication.
Absolutely. And that affects everyone. But we especially need to be protecting our young people and their developing brains when it comes to access to tech.
1,000%. Where can people find you, Nikki? Closing question.
Sure. Everything is at scrollingtodeath.com with a number 2. You can get to all the other things from there. So that's in the podcast episodes. I really encourage parents to listen to the longer form podcast episodes where you get the real lessons and education and real stories of families that have gone through hard things that we can learn from. And so I can, you know, social media too, but I really encourage the long form content. We can do it.
Thank you so much, Nikki. Merry Christmas.
And we'll Merry Christmas. Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, sweetheart. Bye.